Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
It's 6:06 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, welcome back to the show. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every single Saturday right here on News 104.5 WOKV, I'm joined by the big guy, Sasquatch, the Yeti.
Yeah.
6'6", 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, certified master inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on HGTV as the house detective, and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you. Your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. 855-765-1045. Let me give you that number again. I'll give it to you nice and slow. You can put it in your phone, keep it there forever. It is good for all of the shows here at News 104.5 WOKV. Okay, here comes the number. You gave you time to get the phone. 855-765-1045. Sasquatch, large yeah. man, what have the adventures in the garden been this week?
Well, it's been kind of interesting, you know. Well, you know, I want to update on the Roundup scenario, you know.
Uh-huh.
I've read another couple of different articles on it. But the EPA, again, after another research program, says that Roundup does not cause cancer with 15 other different countries.
So well, there's a dichotomy there because the federal court says yes.
Yes. One, yeah, is exactly.
Class action suit says yes.
Yes. And then the EPA says no, you know, uh-huh. so, you know, and then they're still making it. You know, uh-huh. they're still making it and selling it. So, you know, there is a dichotomy there. So
it sounds like as a minimum, if you choose to use the product,
yeah,
read the directions. Use it carefully. Don't get it all over you. I mean,
right,
that's
yeah.
a clear warning.
Read the directions and wear gloves. You know,
yeah.
that's you know, there was the guy who won the case. You know, he's spraying it on his poison oak and poison ivy in California. He was one of them. And another fellow. There's two cases that are being appealed. The judgment was $289,000. Then it was reduced to $289 million, and then it was reduced to 77. Then it's out for appeal. So no telling what it may just wither down to nothing. But so there's a lot of things going on in that case, you know. So Roundup, you know, use rubber gloves. Don't
so
spray
you still
it.
Use the product on a regular basis?
I don't really use it. I usually try to use other herbicides.
I don't use it either.
I've always tried to use other herbicides. I've just not have been in. You know, occasionally I do, you know what I mean? But I always use caution and on any kind of herbicide that you're using, you know, insecticide, pesticide, or any of that other stuff. You know, even though it says that, you know, you don't have to use rubber gloves and some of them, you know, but I would use caution always. But, hey, you know, what's a great idea in your garden, you know, and it's a do-it-yourselfer project, is if you have an old concrete deck and it's getting kind of cracked up, looking rotten looking.
There are tens of thousands of those.
Oh, yeah, time. There's plenty. Now they have this new product out. It's called wooden deck panels. And they're made out of teak. They go range anywhere from $3 a square foot to $10 a square foot, and you can get recycled units, and they're in about maybe 2 or 3 square feet, 2 by 3 pieces. I'll get it right the third time. But what you do is you assemble it and you put it right over your deck.
It just lays there, floats there.
And it's raised above it, so it's not going to be standing in water. And it looks really, really nice. It really nice. And you don't have to be a carpenter. You have to read the instructions, and that's kind of a rare thing.
It just snap together, screw together?
It snaps together.
It's not a plastic product. It's a wood product.
No, it's wood. The relative cost is determined by what kind of wood you get, whether you're using some Brazilian wood or you're using authentic teak or recycled wood.
Right.
But then you can always oil it up, you know, for the maintenance. You can get some teak oil. You use that on your boat, right? What do you use on your boat?
I've used teak oil in the past on the swim platforms were teak. But in this particular boat, I use a product called Cetol.
Cetol. What is that?
It essentially looks like a varnish. It's just a little more durable.
Oh, yeah. So, and how much is that?
Not much. About $20 a quart.
$20 a quart. So, you know, and it's made for weather and keeps the things looking sharp. I wonder if it would work going on pressure treated wood.
No, it absolutely wouldn't work on pressure.
Okay, it just works on that. Okay, so you can use Cetol, teak oil. That's what they recommend for the finishing of it.
The thing to remember, many of the boat products that you use on your bright work are not intended to walk on.
Yeah.
So they're not terribly abrasion resistant, and they're slicker than snake's knot. So,
but very on slippery. Your wooden deck surface,
wooden deck is almost always oiled.
Okay, oil. Yeah. You use teak oil then.
Yep.
Yeah, teak oil. Okay, so teak oil. And what's the cost of that? I'm just curious.
Oh, gosh. $50-$60 a gallon probably.
Oh, that gets pretty expensive. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty, but it's worth it. It's just like, if you buy a can of sealant, it's around $35, you know, but, teak oil would bring it up a little bit, I think, a notch. And how often do you have to use it? Just curious.
In that environment, pretty regular.
Yeah.
I mean, every 3 to 6 months.
Oh, 3 to 6 months. So you use it twice a season. Yeah.
Yep.
People don't really seal their decks until it's on the last legs. You start getting on the maintenance of it. But, you know, so these are some of the things that you do. Now, if your deck is uneven, you know, it depends on how uneven it is. You know, you can put a leveling compound on it. You just take a wood trim. Put it on the sides, you know, sides.
Frame it up a little bit.
And then pour some leveling compound in there. And that's, you can buy that at Home Depot or Lowe's. And what it does is just gets it level. And then you will let it dry and make sure that you spray some oil or WD-40 on the wood trim that you use to level your deck.
So the compound doesn't adhere to it.
Right. It pulls off really easy. Yeah. And then if you want to, you could actually put some adhesive and put a trim piece on the edge if you didn't want the compound or the concrete showing. If the concrete's showing, you know, when you put your deck down, because it's going to be a little bit above it, you can put a trim piece around there or raise the elevation of the sod. So the sod, when the sod grows up, there would be no edge.
Kind of flush.
Yeah. But that's a great idea. So if you have maybe a 10 by 10 deck, you could, or 10 by 12, 10 by 15, you know, you're talking about about $800, $800. And that's going to be a lot less money than a tile and if you're going to have a deck put over the top of it.
Well, and if that slab
look nice.
If the slab is in disrepair,
right.
Lots of cracks, lots of breaks, even a little bit of sediment, and you go to tile over it, that's going to shadow through. And
that's going to show through. And then when you're going to remove the deck, you're going to put a deck there, you got to remove the concrete. So overall, it's going to be less.
How thick is it? Roughly.
They're on a little metal frame that's above the ground, and they're about inch and a half.
That's not too bad.
Not too bad.
One of the things that happens when you start doing overlays on an outside concrete deck is suddenly it gets near the height of the threshold of your sliding door, your exit door, and then you have water problems and trip problems and other problems.
Right.
That one sounds like it might work.
I you know what I really like is when the outside patio is almost even with the floor of the house. You get a grade, you know, so you got positive drainage.
Yeah.
But I mean, it really, that makes it look part of the house. and it actually makes it look it looks pretty nice.
If you've got nice covered decks and some other scenarios, you can do that. But you run into two problems when you do that. One, it's splash, a code specific thing that has to do with water and splashback and all those other things. And the other is when there's a clear step down, people don't usually have much trouble. This is especially appropriate or whatever problematic when you have a sliding door.
Right.
So and what happens is when there's a clear step down, the people sort of step over the sliding track
and
get themselves there. And when it appears to be flush and that track is up a little bit or the threshold, you end up with a trip hazard. So unless you've got a totally smooth transition, which is relatively rare, it's kind of a challenge. And then if you have a smooth transition, you need to account for water in some other
way. Right. But I've raised some, put some brick veneer out there and raised up the brick surface, and it does make the deck appear that it's part of the indoor.
Yeah,
it does make it look nice. It adds another nice element to it. You know, we talked last week about roses, and we were working on some rose projects. You know, we're installing a rose garden at one of the residents, and then we're putting in installing climbing roses. And the question is, you know, well, what about a trellis? Well, the trellis was, you know, getting to be expensive because there was so many of them, and the size was huge. And this is what I did before, and many times on a house, if I wanted to make a trellis or a support system that was not expensive and can be done fairly quickly. And so on the masonry walls, what we take is a masonry nail, and then we drive it into the mortar joint. And that sticks out about maybe 2 inches. It depends on the size, and it's a tight. It goes in there tight.
And you make a trellis out of wire.
And I take a wire hanging wire.
Yeah.
And I string and I make a grid, and it's completely invisible.
Yeah.
It's completely invisible.
I like that.
And it sticks away from the house, and then when your rose goes up, when your rose or your when you just take a little small piece of plastic, or you can even cut strips of garbage bags because they're flexible. You want something that's flexible that can expand, and then when it breaks, it disappears, and you can tie the rose off like that. And so your overall cost is a box of masonry nails, maybe a couple of dollars, and the wire maybe $4 versus, you know, $2,000 for a trellis, and you've got a successful way to tie up your
that's a good use for stainless wire also. You won't get the rust streaks.
Yes. And then if you're going to do wisteria, you know, a lot of people love wisteria, and it is a beautiful. There's a couple houses in San Marco that have wisteria as a climbing vine in their I think in their east western exposure, and it is beautiful when it blooms. But the key thing with wisteria is that you want to let it, because it wants to twine, but you don't want to let it twine because it's so powerful of a vine. So you want to, when it's growing, you want to pull it away and hang it, and let it then grows out again, hang it again. Then, you know, pull a piece out, hang it again. And then make sure you get a lot of those lateral. Get the vine up and then going sideways. Same thing when you're to successfully grow a climbing rose. What most people do without experience is they let the cane go straight up. Okay, that is the not the best thing to do. Is what you, when the cane is going up, that's the branch of the rose, or is that you want to take it and bend it over. So you bend it over as much as you can and then tie it off. So you want to have the side of the cane exposed to the sun. What that's going to do is going to cause all those nodes, those lateral nodes to grow another upward cane. So on every terminal end, you're going to have a flower bud.
That's a good thing.
So you have, instead of turning one rose cane, which may be 10 feet, for your first flower bud or where they're going to be making flowers, now you're going to have 20 terminal ends. So you've increased your flower count 20 times, and then you take and do that redundantly. Where when they gets up and gets the lateral vine, the lateral canes are growing up, you take and turn those down and turn them down, and then you have a beautiful picture when you're all done. And then keeping up, remembering, keeping fertilizing.
I'm just thinking about that. That sounds pretty stressful on the plants. So you really need to keep it fertilized.
Yeah,
so
you want lots of new, a lot of new growth, you know, on that. And then same thing with wisteria. Same thing with wisteria.
I got it. It's 6:20 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Jumping right on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. To the Home and Garden Show, 6:26. Beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville. You're listening to the Home and Garden Show at News 104.5 WOKV. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, along with Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. Joining us from St. Augustine is Robert, who's looking to move some flowers. Robert, welcome to the Home and Garden Show. Robert, have I got you there? All right, we haven't got Robert. That's okay. So, let's imagine I have a gorgeous flower. It just happens to be in the wrong spot. What's the safest, simplest way to move that? And sure, I'll save the flower.
Yeah, well, if there's a lot of wildflowers. I don't know what the laws on digging up wildflowers, but the digging up a flower, when it is flowering, it's not a problem as long as you get a large enough piece of that dirt. You know, flowers don't have. You know, perennials don't have that huge amount of root mass.
Right.
So if you're digging out maybe, what'd you say, a foot and a half root ball, you got the bulk of it. Okay. And make sure you dig, have the hole prepared because it's sandy soil. So if you're sending it, the more steps, more times you lift it, the weaker the root ball is going to get. So if you dig a hole first, you know, get your approximate measurement, and then dig the flowers you want to do and move it back over there into that same hole, and then put maybe a little black cow compost you can get from Home Depot or Lowe's, and then or the local garden center, and then tap down on that and water that in, you should be good. But the problem is when people dig something up, set it down, move it again, and before they put
it in the hole. It's very stressful each time.
Falling apart, then that's a lot more stressful. And then because, you know, we have sandy soil here, and the soil does not hold together well. Like if we lived in Georgia, a clay ball would be
And you want that whole project to be completed in a singular day, singular maneuver. Mm-hmm. You don't want to leave those exposed roots out.
Digging out this
week and bury it next week, you don't want to do that. I think there's also a big risk of the hole too deep. So you transplanted it, you get that baby too deep. Right. Then you got some problems.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, the best, if you love perennial gardening and if you love to have more color and you wanted to start out with, perennials that you could buy at the store, the best size perennial garden to start with would be, you know, the 4-inch or the 3-inch pot. The smaller the perennial that you buy, the better the end result. It's going to be much more productive. When you look at that root ball in that peaty, planting material, that dries out. When it gets dried out, it never really gets completely wet again. And you want the roots of the plant to be in the indigenous soil. And because of that, you want to start with the smallest plant that you could possibly get. The smallest plant is your best plant. It will require you to have a little bit more watering, but once it gets established, it's established. Also, when you're planting perennials, I know everybody's out there buying new flowers. Look at the crown of the plant. The crown is where the stems and the leaves come out from the roots. Make sure that is at ground level. The growers always overfill a container, and that's what kills your plants. You plant them, the dirt is way above it, and then it gets soggy around that, around the stems, and it rots.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Good point. It's 6:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, then more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. The Home and Garden Show. It is 6:36. Beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, enjoying the day with Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. If you'd like to join us, we would love to hear from you at 855-765-1045. Now, also, we are streaming live, both the audio as well as the video. You can see that on Facebook and many other places, but the easiest is Facebook at the Home Pro Inspections page or Wally Conway page. We're expanding that quite a bit, but that's where it is for now. You can also post pictures there, video there, anything else you'd like us to comment on, if that makes it a little bit easier for you. Drones.
Drones.
As we sit here in the newsroom and seeing up on the television, we had the unfortunate incident of the 737 aircraft landing in the St. John's River, or skidding into the St. John's River today. Reminds me of drones. You know, as an old Navy pilot, I think about those things a lot. Anyway, it is very, very, very common now that when you're doing things around the house, buying or selling in particular, that there are drones involved. Sometimes those drones are used by the home inspector. Sometimes those drones are used by photographers and other people around you. Here's what you need to know about people operating drones at your home. You want to ensure absolutely positively and without exception that they are, in fact, licensed to do so. The much like a pilot, much like the airline pilot who managed to land in the river, the FAA issues a license for an unmanned aircraft, which is their technical term for a drone. The reason that's so important is several. One, you want to be sure that they can be safe, so no one does anything goofy or damaged. They learn those things. The other is to assure that they know where they can legally and safely fly. So this NAS Jax incident is a wonderful example. So those folks that live adjacent to the bases are under very restricted airspace. And by having the license, they can legally do some things that would be otherwise forbidden at that 40 feet and below around your house. Same with the photographers. And the photographers tend to want to fly a little higher than the home inspectors and building inspectors to get that really sexy shot of your home. So please, 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 when you have been referred to a home inspector, a photographer, anyone using a drone for any commercial purpose means it's being paid for, do that license verification. You can do that at the FAA website, or have your real estate agent or home inspector validate that they've got the right and proper license. Let's go over to Robert in St. Augustine. He was a fellow we were attempting to help earlier. We had a little difficulty getting him up on the line. Let's see if we can't get that going on. Robert, welcome to the show.
Yes.
Hello, Robert.
Good morning.
Morning.
Robert, what type plant were you attempting to relocate?
Lantana. And I got two different locations. One, there's four, which I had actually planted. It's kind of like off the ground type thing. And I put them in, they were in a gallon pot. And I had just put them in the ground in that, and they had spread out and got kind of big. They're about 2 feet off the ground. And then I taken cuttings, and in the front of the yard, I put them in the ground there. And they are a little younger. They're about a year now. And I'd like to move them to a different location in, off this property to a place where we're buying. And I was wondering if you suggested I prune them back. And I have some bigger pots, like 5 or 10 gallon pots.
Yeah.
That would work.
Well, you know, if you're going to immediately transplant them, I don't think there's any need for you to pot them up. But what I would do,
like if the move is going to be in 3 weeks, and I can't put them in the ground until we close.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah. Okay. Well,
time, or should I just kind of get things ready and then I'll just move them with a trailer?
Well, ideally, I mean, if you gotta dig them up and put them and hold them in place for a while, that's always a good idea. But if you can, you know, dig them up and move them that day, there's no need to pot them up, not at all. You just wrap them in newspaper and or any type of fabric and just kind of hold them the ball together, and you should be in good condition. You know, you can put them in containers, just stack them up in containers, they root ball. Pruning them back is the most important thing.
Yeah,
if you could prune them back a week before you move them, or 2 weeks before you move them, then you're in much better condition.
Okay, so I should prune them now.
Yeah.
They're flowering everything.
Yeah, yeah. Pruning them is what's good.
Like, what? Like, so they are starting to look like sticks?
Yes, right. Get them to look like a stick because, you know, you're reducing the amount of roots. And when you're reducing the amount of roots, you want to have less load on the roots. And if you have a lot of foliage, a lot of flowers, you know, there's a lot more demand on the root system or the, you know, to bring up water and nutrients, which you cut that in half by pruning them. And the likelihood of them surviving by pruning them and then digging them up and just digging up a stem is about, you increase that probably 50%. You know, it's a huge amount of likelihood of success when you can prune a week and a half before you move them.
Okay, because they kind of just blown out just recently.
When they're all grown out like that, that's a lot of foliage to get water to when you've cut the root system way down.
Now, I have another plant too that's in a pot, good sized pot, but I presume that there's probably a root coming out at the bottom. It's an avocado. That I started from seed, and it's about now. The tree itself is not, you know, thick. It's probably about an inch in diameter.
I mean, how long are you planning on? How old are you?
Me?
Yeah.
60.
I think I just buy one, because if by the time that thing produces a fruit, you might, you know, you're right on the edge. You know, it takes about 10 years for them to get an avocado. Like, so, I mean, you're right on the edge right there. You know what I mean?
I like it the way it looks. And I've had
If you like the way it looks, no problem. But if you're getting hoping for avocado, I don't know if I'd, you know, you're getting, you know, buy a large one.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> Well, the one I have now is about 8 feet high now.
Yeah, well, they're fast growers, but it takes them about 7 to 10 years, depends on how much fertilizer you get on to produce a fruit. So you'll be around.
They're kind of expecting anything. I like the way it looks.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Ornamental, though, I'll go for that. But if you're avocado, maybe you might not make it to the first fruit. You know?
Well, my question is, the root that comes out at the bottom, just leave it alone, just pull it out.
Yeah, just pull it out and just cut the pot off of it and then pull the tees or roots apart and then plant it.
Okay. Yeah. All right, sounds good. Thank you so much. Love your show.
Thanks Robert. Appreciate you. You know, people who are our age, Wally, and we're planting citrus trees from seed, you know, you maybe rethink that.
Get it all ready.
12 years for your first citrus fruit.
Yeah. All righty. Let's head over to the west side. Welcome Jack to the Home and Garden Show and see if we can't salvage his potatoes. Welcome, Jack.
Good morning, gentlemen. Enjoying your show as usual. I do have finally found out, Larry, what was chewing on my potatoes.
What's
little
that?
Brown bugs on the bottom side of the leaves with a hard back. They're about as big as a
little beetle. A little beetle.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's, yeah. Have you got some more, you put any more 7-Dust on it?
I put some on there, but I didn't put it underneath it. Like, I guess I don't have to.
Yeah, every 7 to 10 days, the stuff's only good for it. And if it rains, it washes off, you got to do it again.
Yeah, well, I have to wait a couple of days anymore.
Yeah, and then spray the ground too. 7-Dust is pretty good against them. All right?
All right, I'll do that. Now, last thing, I scraped some of that straw away from one of my potatoes, red potatoes, three-quarters of a pound, the first one I pulled out of there.
Wow, oh my gosh, that's as big as Wally's head.
Well, it just out, and it got more hair on it, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, 3/4 of a pound? That's a monster.
Jack, how's the turnout been for early voting?
Very, very, very poor. Very poor. If I'm going to tell you, if we're averaging 10 people an hour, we're doing good.
Goodness.
They may not like me saying that, but that's what truth is.
Yeah. So, Jack, on the back to the potatoes, because a lot of people have struggling with potatoes to get them to grow well. So what was you followed the formula of using Super Bloom and some fish emulsion on there and some Black Cow?
Well, I put them in that yellow sand, Black Cow, and mulch.
No, it's not. That was it.
Yeah, that was it. But then I've fertilized since then with Miracle-Gro.
Right.
And I haven't put the fish mulching on there yet.
Okay, so you, it's very pretty simple. Just rich soil, we always talk about, and a little bit of yellow sand, and you got a great job. 3/4 of a pound. That's a big boy.
And that's not. I haven't uncovered that. That's just in that one bucket. It's just one I took out. I haven't taken any more out of there.
Wow! Out of 1 5-gallon bucket. So you grew this in 1 5-gallon bucket.
I'm going to count. I'll uncover them tomorrow on that one book and take everything out because she's going to do some cooking next week.
So you got Black Cow, you got Sea Yellow Sand, and you put Miracle-Gro Rose fertilizer on. Okay.
And I had some of the just regular old mulch that you get.
Right, right. So that was a simple formula for success, and that I think that you know a lot of times on vegetable garden, you know, you could you want to keep your costs down. You know, you want to have organic food. Be like, oh, Wally's a big fan of organic food, and I agree with him that, gets it delivered to his house all the time. But, you know, you want to make sure that you don't spend, you know, more than you could buy it at organic food place. You know, you want the pleasure of growing your own vegetables. But so you got your eye potatoes. You cut those out yourself, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. So, and you cut those out from, where'd you get the, cut them out from what, where'd you get the eyes from?
Got them from up here at Ace Hardware.
Okay, you got the eyes and you multiply your stock. So in your production, you got one bag of Black Cow, which is about, what, $3 or $4. You got some Yellow Sand, maybe $1, maybe 50 cents. You know, that's not expensive. A used bucket, you can get those everywhere. So you're talking about maybe, and the total cost, you know, you maybe got about $5 in the whole cost. So that's going to be in the water and your labor. So I think you're going to be making money on this, Jack. You're going
to
be saving.
Oh, I will. I need to. And the beans are doing good too.
Now that's what I call good vegetable garden. When you're saving, you know, what's potatoes cost a pound, Jack?
Oh gosh, I don't remember. I bought 2 5-pound bags, whites and reds, and I don't think it was over ten
bucks. Okay, so you can get at least a couple pounds out of those buckets. Because
oh,
once
absolutely.
Three quarters, you know, you get maybe 10 pounds. So you're making $5.
Yeah, I cut those eyes. I cut very sparingly, as Wally would say. I cut eyes no bigger than a size of a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I got as many of them as I could.
And then you got your seed supply for next year.
Yeah.
So you further cut down your costs, and you can just recycle that dirt. So we'll be down zero. I love that, Jack. Economy. All right.
One thing on that red, she's not even going to scrape it. You're going to cook it like it is. Keep that good flavor on that skin too.
Oh yeah, I like that. Keep the skin.
Oh yeah, when you grow them out of your own garden, they taste so much different.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Oh, I appreciate your advice. You gave me that a long time ago when you told me what to put in the bucket. Would like to broke my back with that yellow sand, but I ain't going to get as much of that anymore.
Rollers next year.
Yeah, it'll be there.
All right. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you all for the show. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thanks,
Jack. We've got early voting all the way through next Sunday now.
All right. What are the hours for early voting today and tomorrow?
10 to 6, sir.
Both days?
Yes, sir.
It's the same during the week, too, right?
Yeah, 10 to 6 all week till next Sunday.
And any person who wants to vote early, you can go to any early voting site. You don't need to go to your specific normal precinct. You can go anywhere you want.
That's right. When they come in the library, that's my first thing. Come on in and vote with us. Oh, I got to go to the library. No, come on in. Well, I'm not in my precinct. Well, I got you right there. You don't have to be.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, sir. It's 8:50 here at News 104.5 on Home and Garden Show. Brief break, then right back to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 6:55 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Enjoying the day with you. I'm here with Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. Me, I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Love to have you join us. That number to call in, 855-765-1045. And if you happen to be joining us on Facebook for the live audio as well as video stream, feel free to post any pictures you like or other commentary right there, and we'll integrate you into the show in that particular way. Critters, critters, critters. You know, it's the time of year when the critters are on the move, and also where the young critters are coming alive.
Yeah.
Every now and then, some mama and daddy critter were doing a hoochie in your attic, and now they got little babies up in your attic, and that's not a good thing. So the question becomes, what can you do in a reasonable, simple, practical, and affordable sense to keep the critters from moving into your attic? Because prevention's a lot easier than getting them out. Right. What we've discovered after crawling through about 35,000 attics at Home Pro Inspections, if you get up into your attic, if you can do that safely, if not, don't do it. get up into your attic during the daytime and turn your flashlight off as you're moving about the attic. So move a little bit, turn the light off, and you look around that perimeter where the light is coming in.
Right.
Very often, that's an easy way to sort where it's coming from. And then you need only to block that area off with something metal is usually the easiest thing. We've had people use screening. Good stainless sturdy screening is good. Vinyl screening, they tend to chew right through. But a metal screen, you can sometimes do it from the inside, do it from the outside, clog that space up so they're not in there. What do you do if they're in there? You know they're there. You hear the little feet or you hear the little chirping, wonderful noises during the night, during the day. If they're already in there, you got to get them out before you seal it off. Because if you seal it off before you get them out and they die up there, now it's going to stink. And the challenge with that is finding the dead ones. You know, they're lost in the attic. Sometimes they drop down inside walls. You don't want to do that. So what we've found that's safe, simple, free, and successful up in the attic is get your boombox up there and crank up the volume. The music,
Led Zeppelin?
No.
What did you find to be more
Metallica?
No.
Critters love Led Zeppelin, especially Stairway to Heaven. They come from miles around. Yeah.
Metallica drives them nuts.
Get some Metallica. Boom it. Especially the larger mammals, raccoons cannot stand that loud.
They're going to another place and get some peace and quiet.
Yeah. So I've done this several times. I now have spray foam in my attic, so we don't have critters up there any longer. It's all sealed off nicely. But in previous years,
how many days you have to do it with Metallica to get rid of them?
Oh, it took 15-20 minutes.
And they were gone.
Yep. And it was interesting, too. You know, as you know, my house is all cedar and it's never been painted, which is one of the reasons we ended up with critters. It's easy to walk it up. But the mama raccoon carried the little ones down one at a time. They crawled right down the side of the house. And I have all glass windows in the front. I can just see them carrying it down. And she was not happy with me. She flipped me a happy sign on the way down. But, you know, it's no different than when you were growing up and I was growing up. Your mom was concerned about the influence of rock and roll on us.
Right, right.
And
in our little minds.
Yeah, and that crosses all species of mammal, and that's why Metallica works so well, played loud, to get raccoons and other critters out of your attic. So it's kind of my tip of the day on that. It's 6:59 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, then we'll be back for the second hour of the Home and Garden Show. Love to have you stay with us. If you'd like to join us and participate in the show, that's always welcome. That number is 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning, 7:07 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Home and Garden Show. The Home and Garden Show features Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden, who brings 20 plus years toiling in the soil to the show, sharing his expertise with you as well as answering your calls. Me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, bringing 20 plus years of crawling about in houses to share what we're seeing with you and help you along in that direction. If you'd like to join us, we would love to hear from you as always. The number to call in is 855-765-1045 or if you're watching via the live video stream on Facebook at Home Pro Inspections or Wally Conway, Facebook page, either one. If you happen to be there, you can post your questions or pictures or whatever you've got there to participate in that way. So we're just happy that you're with us. Speaking happy today, yes, today. Beginning at 8 o'clock, running till noon, is the Best Buddies Friendship Walk out at the Seawalk Pavilion. I got my Best Buddy shirt on.
I know. So
folks in the video stream can see that. Uh-huh. Yep. I'm actually the chair of the advisory board for Best Buddies.
Okay, great.
However, so here's what we're doing and here's why we're doing it. First, we'll start with why. Everyone would love to have a friend. Even if they're a friend like Larry, that's better than no friend at all. And people, particularly young people, school-age people with intellectual or developmental disabilities, often have challenges making friends. And sometimes people are just mean and cruel to them. That's completely unnecessary.
Yes.
So what we're doing at Best Buddies is we build buddy pairs, friendship pairs, so that everyone can have a friend. It's a great thing. It really strengthens the quality of life for both individuals, and it's amazing to see the just the quality of people that become involved in Best Buddies. And we'd love to have you involved or come out and say hi and meet us today. We'll be at the Seawalk Pavilion. It begins at 8. We'll be wrapped up by noon, and probably I think about 9 o'clock we'll actually start on the walk portion, which is it's a very easy walk. It's it's as much ceremonial and friendship as it is a physical challenge. It's not intended to be a physical challenge. It's intended to be a demonstration of friendship and inclusion. So yeah. I would love to see you there. I have my blue Best Buddies shirt on and my hat to keep the sun off my bald head. So lots of great people. You'll meet some wonderful people of all ages, too. You know, young people, we'd love to have you. Old people, we'd love to have you, too, and everybody in between. So that's my good thought on Best Buddies. I've got a question here for you, Larry, that came via the Facebook Live video stream. Okay. A gentleman named Clint. Clint has a sago palm, and the fronds are starting to go a little bit brown. He's out in Hilliard. Why is it doing that, and what can he do to cause it to return to health?
Okay, that's a great question because, you know, have issues here, you know, most of them, because they're marginal or they do well. But there's a lot of soil issues. And palms need a particular group of trace elements. When they don't get those, they respond in that way. They get the frizzle top is what it's called.
Frizzle top.
Right. And
so how do we get those trace elements back into the plant?
Very simple. Go to Home Depot or Lowe's and get yourself some palm fertilizer. They have all that's included in it. And, you know, it's relatively inexpensive. You think you can get a bag for around $10-$15 and, follow directions. Again, you got to follow directions. You got to get the right amount on there and then trim off the dead leaves. You know, you got to trim off the dead leaves and, then you should have recovery, get the fertilizer and water in there, and then they'll have a new group coming out, and they should be completely, you know,
should be easy to save at this particular point.
Yeah. It's not going to be lethal. It just looks unsightly. Okay. So just trim those leaves off and, or the fronds or whatever you want to call them. You know, we're going to go.
And that's a liquid fertilizer.
Right.
Should you also spray?
No, it's granular.
Granular.
So you put it, one of the biggest mistakes, you know, people do is, when you put your fertilizer on, you put it on top of the mulch. I mean, the mulch is going to grab some of that fertilizer. It's going to evaporate. You want to get it in ground contact and also cover it up back up.
You really want to get that mulch out away from
out of the
chunk of that all the time, right? Because you don't want it to retain that moisture so much.
We were treating some palms the other week, and you know, having those ferns growing on the palms, and having the mulch stacked around the base of palms is very risky for that palm. And if you have a sable palm, they're not expensive. So if you like it that way, no problem. But if you have those Canary Island dates, you know, those palms are expensive. You know, if you've had it in your yard for 20 years, that's a $10,000-$20,000 palm. And, then the cost of removal. So once it gets, Gamma-Dera butt rot, you know, it's.
I would never want that.
Yeah, well, I think you got a case of them. I mean, but Gamma-Dera is lethal to the palms, okay? So you want to make sure you keep that away. And also, I mean, I looked at a live oak that is a beautiful live oak. It's probably at least 150 years old. They had a mulch, they call them mulch volcano around them, the live oak. And I went to the north side of the tree, and I started moving the mulch away, trying to get it ready. And there's like a huge, you know, foot and a half area soft, rotted out. Then out. What do you think is going to happen when we have a windstorm?
Blow it over.
Exactly. It's going to be damaged. I try to fix it and try to improve it. Keep the mulch, you know, about ground level when it gets in contact with the tree. You don't want to have that mulch stacked up on the north side of the tree 2 feet deep, because that's going to create damage to that tree, any tree.
Right.
I don't care what it is. Keep the mulch away from the base of the tree, you know, and it's going to be problematic if you guarantee it, if you don't do that.
Got to be able to breathe, got to be able to dry out.
The main thing, that tissue's not designed. I mean, It's not designed to be underwater in the ground. It's designed to be protect, hold in the moisture, you know, with the tree instead of absorbing it. Okay. So that against the tree is going to be lethal.
All right. That sounds like a good thing. You know, we were chatting earlier about critters getting in the attic, and I mentioned I have spray foam in my own attic. People very often ask the question, you know, should I put spray foam in my attic? Should I put spray foam in my walls? I will share this with you, having looked at thousands and thousands and thousands of houses, both new houses as well as renovation. If you're building a new home and spray foam in the attic and spray foaming the walls, yeah. I have never, ever, ever heard a person regret that particular decision.
It's going to be quiet.
It's quiet. You virtually eliminate bugs because there's no bug path. There's no critter path.
Right.
The quietness is the greatest thing. And then when it comes to your electric bill, you know, the cost to heat and cool your house, you also reduce that. So it's a lowered expense to heat and cool. It's immensely quiet, and it just stays cleaner.
And it's really terribly inexpensive when you're building it.
During new construction, it's not terribly expensive. It might add 1% to the cost of the home. It's not terribly expensive.
How much savings in electricity and
I would, if we're building a new construction, so we're comparing new to new and like to identical houses, maybe 10%.
So you'll save 10% a year on your electricity.
Yeah. Yeah, not considerably more than that. What happens in a sales process when people say, let me just use spray foam as an example. If you spray foam your attic, you'll reduce your heating and cooling costs, you know, by 20 or 30%. Well, that's true. Here's the challenge. Your heating and cooling is only 30, 40% of your total electric bill. Right. So when you save 10 or 20% of 30 or 40%, you're down to 10 or 15% in savings.
Yeah.
So it is a savings. Though sometimes it's when it's explained, it's not explained. It's more
it's
a sales process.
It's a number game. It's a number game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you know, in a house, when you see dust in the house, most of the time the dust that you see is coming out of the attic. When you spray foam your attic, when your attic is spray foamed, because it's sealed from the exterior, there's no dust. It's cleaner. Yeah. It's fresher. It's a wonderful thing to do it. Now, when you get to the position of what about my existing home, to attempt to put spray foam insulation in the walls of an existing home is essentially impossible in any remotely cost-effective way.
Because you have studs to keep it from...
No, the studs isn't the problem. There's already insulation in the wall.
Oh, okay.
So you can't have two things.
Except in an old house.
If you had zero, there are some products you can do that, but that's really an expensive and challenging item. The trick in the attic in a renovation, a couple of things, is assuring that all the old insulation gets out of there.
Right.
If you don't get the old insulation out of there, it's dirty. And the other thing that happens is you end up risking super cooling the attic because the ducts are going through the attic. You're insulating at the top with a spray foam, you've insulated beneath them with the insulation that was already there, and that attic can get so cool that the ducts sweat. And when the ducts sweat, now you drive up the humidity and you run the risk of mold. So the easiest thing to do to assure you don't have a problem, get all the old insulation out of there, vacuum it up so it's nice and clean. Then they'll seal all the penetrations in the ceiling. So now we're stopping airflow and dust flow, and then... Then apply the spray foam. It's a hard, hard, difficult, dirty job to do well.
Right.
It's easy to do it poorly. They just get it in, you know.
There's a lot of details that need to be taken.
Yeah,
care.
Yeah. The details are in the extraction of the old insulation and the ceiling. And then the real place that it matters so much is assuring that the spray foam comes down the sheathing under the roof. And makes it to the top of the wall.
Right.
So that
there's no gap there.
There's no gap.
And that's tight there to get in there.
Yeah. And what happens a lot of times, especially.
You got to lay it out on your stomach to get there.
It's tough, miserable work. I've worked around those guys for years. It's hot. It's dirty. It's confining.
Nasty.
It's just nasty
and
work.
You're in a suit.
Yeah, they got to when it comes. Yeah, you got to keep that off you.
Yeah.
So anyway, some of the I have seen scenarios where the spray foam company, to save money, which is save time, save money, is they'll take the existing insulation and press it out to the eaves so that they're attempting to seal it using the old insulation. The problem with that is the fiberglass insulations are very porous, so air and moisture still move through it. And then when they spray the foam over top of that, the foam doesn't go all the way to the outside wall. And so you end up with a moist spot and mold spots.
Right.
It's not good.
A wet area.
So there's it is. I love spray foam done well. It is expensive to do it well.
If you say you do your attic, you know, if you live in an older home or you live at home with no insulation, your attic is probably your most, will get your most return for your
life. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, the attic, that's a great point. There's a much greater return on improving your attic than improving your walls. And the reason for that is the temperature of the air outside your wall is whatever the air temperature is. It's 80 degrees, 90 degrees, even 100 degrees.
Right.
The temperature in the attic, because it's a confined space and it doesn't breathe well, it can be 150 or 165.
That's right up against your roof of your bedroom or
that's right. So your
room.
Ceiling is feeling that temperature pressure and your ductwork. So if I love spray foam, it's important that it's done right. It's 720 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Brief break. We have enjoying your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. 26 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden and me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. The only thing that could make the day better is hearing from you at 855-765-1045. Let's bring on Clay from Ponte Vedra. He's got himself a 1950s house with windows that are sweating. Uh-oh. Welcome to the show, Clay.
Thank you.
What type windows do you have? What are the frames made of?
They're aluminum frame, single pane windows.
That is a challenge, my friend. It is almost impossible with an old aluminum frame window and single pane to stop that sweating. The things you could try, your air conditioning person may be able to adjust your heat pump so it optimizes dehumidification. That might help. Keeping the blinds open, that might help. But to be honest, it may well be time to upgrade those windows with a nice vinyl insulated frame and double pane glass. It'll be quieter, it'll be cleaner, a little bit more efficient, and that sweating will dramatically be reduced.
One thing I've noticed is that it's not necessarily on the window pane itself, but on
the frame
wall surrounding. You know, like it's concrete block house and it's got plaster finish on the inside.
Right. Yeah, you've got the...
around the window, and then it ends up growing mildew.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
The style of window is probably the biggest problem.
That's probably the single biggest contributor. Now, many of the block houses around town from the 50s, there's no insulation in the walls, and you may even have one of those, it sounds like, where there's not even any drywall. The interior of the wall is the backside of the brick, or a block, rather, that's got a sort of a coating on it, almost like a stucco. Is that your situation?
Yeah, like an orange peel finish.
Yeah. Those are wonderful houses. They're built like bunkers. They'll be here forever. But in that scenario, the only things that you can do in a reasonable, cost-effective sense are change out the windows and optimize the dehumidification features of your heat pump system.
Or maybe even installing a dehumidifier?
If you could test that with a portable in small, older homes. I'm not really a fan of central dehumidification. There's other things you can do that are probably less expensive. How old is your heat pump?
It's about 6 years old now.
Okay.
I want to increase the air circulation like an indoor fan.
A fan might help a little bit.
Yeah.
What you're trying to do is move air so that it can be dehumidified.
It doesn't collect in that spot.
Yeah, if you were looking for the least expensive things to experiment with, the least expensive would be that portable dehumidifier. But I really think that changing out the windows that are now, 60 years old, it's probably time. I think that's going to give you the most bang for the buck. Okay.
Okay. Appreciate the help.
Thanks, Clay. Wish you well with it.
Okay.
729 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic Weather and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. 735 here on News 1045 on the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you're with us. A reminder, if you need a large landscaper during the week, easy to find all the time online, larrysgarden.com. Got the blog, got the video, frequently asked questions. And should you desire to speak to Larry during the week, telephone. Here it comes.
Telephone number.
346-1970 outside of the immediate Jacksonville area. 904-346-1970. It's home buying time. 700 people will buy a home in the greater Jacksonville area this week, and the wise and fortunate will choose Home Pro Inspections. Here is the website. Yes. GoHomePro.com or the phone number 268-8211 for the folks outside of Jacksonville, Palm Coast. We spend a lot of time down there. 904-268-8211. And remember, 25 years experience, 25,000 plus home inspections, and $25,000 in after inspection warranty protection. Water, water everywhere.
Yes.
And you want to be sure it's good before you drink a drop. Affordable Water Jacks. You know, it's interesting, this whole thing about moving salt and having salt and doing salt. Two things I will tell you. Affordable Water has some really neat systems that it's demand metering of the salt. What does that mean? It means rather than just a timer that decides when to do the regeneration of the media, what it does, it measures when it needs to be done based on the quality of the water, not just on time.
Right.
So what happens is you only are replenishing or regenerating the system when the system needs to be regenerated.
Right.
So it gives you a much more balance, I guess you'd say.
There's no waste.
The quality of the water and virtually no waste. That's a good thing. The other thing they're able to do, not only will it use less salt, is they can put you on their delivery schedule, which is essentially exactly the same cost if you're humping salt on your own. So, and while
when you're
there,
back out.
And while they're there, they're looking at the system, ensuring everything is doing well. So it's almost like a system inspection at the same time. Another neat thing that they do with Affordable Water that it doesn't happen automatically from many sources, especially do-it-yourself, is they have a dual media type system. What does that mean? Well, filtering water is different than softening the water.
Right.
And by blending softening and filtration, you have an even finer ability to cause that water to be the healthy water, the fine water that you really want. So I know them, I like them, I trust them. They're licensed to do this work, both locally, statewide, and national certifications. If you had a number, any license,
and
number,
they can serve as any other softener. I mean, if you've had a softener, you don't have your guy anymore, or the company, you're not satisfied with the service, they can service even if they didn't suck.
Well, the majority of companies that sell water treatment equipment don't service it.
Right.
They sell it, they're gone.
Right.
And that's what makes Affordable Water nice. So not only can they service what they sell you, if someone else has done it, or even if you did a do-it-yourself job and now it needs a little bit of attention, they can do that. And we have a fun relationship with Affordable Water. Our warranty products that we put on the houses that we inspect include coverage of the water softener. Virtually no other company does that.
Right.
So we have coverage. And then the challenge is, okay, I got coverage. Who the heck am I going to get to do that work? Our coverages allow you to use Affordable Water, which is perfect. Now it gets done right and everybody's happy. So affordablewaterjacks.com. Oh, I know what I was starting to share with you.
Yes.
It's about the licensing thing. No matter what type of license, I have home inspection license. I got a lot of licenses. So Mark Kinder, the founder and principal at Affordable Water, here's his license number. You ready? W, that's the water license.
Water.
32.
32.
If you're license number 32 or anything.
It was there when the earth was formed.
Yeah, it could be he helped do it. So.
Yeah.
Good group of people. Let's go out to Callahan, check in with Mike, who's got an interesting thought. He wants to decorate a stump.
Decorate a stump, okay.
Not sure I subscribe to that.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things you can do with stumps.
Well, let's hear about the stump
first.
You don't even know what it is.
It's made out of wood, I'm sure.
Mike, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
The stump is along a driveway that goes into a church, and it was a large pine, and so pretty expensive to grind the stump out. So my thought, I've left the stump. It's about 3 foot up. and I'd like to put a plant on top. I know I got to anchor the basket to it, but I'm thinking an air plant. What could I put on that stump? Obviously, it's not going to be sunk into dirt, so I need something that...
You're going to put a pot up there, right?
Yeah, like a pot. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, you can actually make a container out of that thing, too. Just, you know, you get a chainsaw, you got to be careful, but you can...
Hollow it out.
Hollow it out. Make a chair out of it, make a seating bench off of it, out of it too. But a plant on top, no problem. An air plant would be what part of town are you located at? I forgot.
What part of town? West side town.
West side. That's going to be a little more cold sensitive. So I would say anything, any type of succulents, you know, that are going to be, because that's going to be pretty dry. Okay, and you can put it in there in any type of container. And then, it, you know, how to fasten it down so it doesn't, you know, blow around when you have these windstorms is just some, and this is a point, I like Wally's latex caulking, you know, it's a water-based caulking. It's good because it's easy to pull off. It's adhesive, but it's just not so adhesive that you can't remove it when you need to remove it. So use that to anchor the pot to the top of the stump. I like the idea of just cutting out the center with a chainsaw.
How about a bird bath?
Well, I did try that. That stump is hard as a rock.
Yeah, you have to have a very sharp, you know, if you got an old chainsaw blade, it ain't going to work. You got to change your blade. You know, you're going to have to change your blade. Make sure you got, you know, put plenty of oil, bar oil in there, and then just kind of chop out. You should be, they cut through that thing there. It tells me that your chainsaw blade is dull. That's the worst thing.
Dangerous.
Dangerous chainsaw, dull blades, chainsaw blades, you know, they're dangerous. Yeah.
Okay. How deep should I go?
A foot and a half.
Okay.
And then you can drill a hole if you want drainage, just to get a, you know, paddle bit and then drill right in there. And then one of the areas that it's not visible is visible, and just drill right into that cavity and you got drainage.
Okay, just fill it up with potting soil.
I'd put a little bit of gravel on the bottom if you're able to put a hole through it, you know, and be able to allow the drainage, put a little bit of gravel on the bottom, and then put a layer of weed mat. You know, so the soil and the dirt doesn't mix. So you keep the good drainage. It doesn't clog it up, the drainage system. And then you put your potting soil on top. All right.
Okay. Hey, thanks for mentioning the mulch. I've got about 15 elm trees, and I stack it up about 2 feet.
That's the worst thing. I mean, it doesn't happen every single time, but it does happen a lot. And if right, is you just need the right climatic conditions, and boom, you've got the problem.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks,
Mike. I like a bird bath. Thanks. That's an idea also.
You like a bird bath?
Oh yeah, on a abandoned stump or whatever you want to call that stump. Oh, yeah. Put a bird bath on top.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
That. You could also put a little fountain on top.
Make a bird feeder out of it. You know,
a feeder, a bath.
Just nail a little piece of plank there to it, and then bird feeder.
And to your point about putting that drain hole in the bottom, it's easier to drill the hole so you get it in the right spot from the inside out than from the outside in.
Because
if you miss,
it's hard. It's hard to get that right angle. You know, get the drill in there and get that. It's hard to
get. It's a big stump, though. He says three feet. That's a monster stump.
That is a monster stump.
Yeah. And you can also get a drill.
It'll be a longleaf pine. Yeah, probably a long.
Get a drill with a 90 on it.
Yeah, 90. Oh, those are handy.
There you go.
Yeah, I love those drills with a little 90 degree.
I like it.
Well, but it's getting ready to change to, you know, this time of the year. You know, we're getting into May, June. It's the climate is changing. We're
getting more humid.
And what to do about your roses? You know, this is the time when you need to think around May and June to have some slight cutback. Not as radical as you do in February that we do, but have about 20 or 30% cutback. Because, you know, the roses have now been growing March, April, May, June. You know, that's the normal, that's twice the gardening season in Massachusetts.
Sure.
You know, and now we got to go June, July, August, September, October, November, December. So they're going to get elongated, especially if you get hybrid, you have hybrid teas, they're going to start to extend. So you want to have a light cutback now and have some more fertilizer applied. I mean, your First Emulsion and your Miracle Rose rose fertilizer during the warm season. If you want them to keep blooming as vigorously. Now, if you don't want them to bloom as vigorously, they're going to go heat dormant somewhat in maybe August and July. July is the hottest month of the year. But, you know, so you want to plan ahead on pruning back your roses. Also, cleaning up, you know, spraying some fungicide around there is always a good idea.
Sure.
And then getting another application of fertilizer to keep your roses manageable, you know, if you have a rose garden. So plan ahead on that. Then also, we're going into the, if you're a home gardener or your home, like to take care of lawn yourself, time to apply the fungicide. You know, the types of fungus are going to be out there, are changing. And this is when the humidity is high. Is when your lawn's going to suffer from fungus. So applying the fungicide and your arena, your pest control, the chinch bugs, immunize your grass against chinch bugs, especially St. Augustine.
Okay. I think I might do that.
Okay.
Send out to Mandarin, check in with Eddie. Wants to chat about a vapor barrier under his house.
Barrier.
Welcome, Eddie.
Okay.
Good morning. Yeah, I've got a 1978 home here in Mandarin. I've got a couple of areas in my floor that started to rot away, and I was told I need a vapor barrier. And what I found was my air conditioner contractor had put new vent, the tubing underneath for the vents that were insulated, but they put them on the ground instead of mounting them to the floor.
That's not good.
And the reason they said that is because I needed to put down a vapor barrier.
So
I wanted to call you guys and maybe get some ideas on what's needed, what kind of people I should use for that. Should it be a French drain? We do get a lot of water in the rainy season here, so.
So let me make sure I got a clear picture. There is a crawl space under your home. And the ductwork is under your home. And the ductwork is ductwork is laying on the ground?
Yes.
You need to get the ductwork off the ground. The ductwork needs to be suspended below the floor, not laying in the ground. You need to fire that guy. That's preposterous.
Right.
Whatever the reason they told you why they wanted to lay it on the ground is baloney.
Yeah.
Okay.
You shouldn't want to put it up on, hang it up.
So it needs to be up off the ground. Now, to the issue of water in the crawl space, is there standing water down there or is it just damp?
It's just very damp. Now, when we have, the hurricane weather and the very heavy rains,
mm-hmm.
the water does go under there, but it does dry up fairly quickly, but it doesn't seem to really permanently dry.
Right.
So first and foremost,
you need to get the ductwork up out of that damp, wet environment. And it may be, if it's been inundated with water, meaning it was laying on the ground and standing water got into it, ideally you'll change out that ductwork. That is nasty, nasty, nasty. There's every type of funk and filth and feces and everything else in there. So you may need to change it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Funk, filth, and feces.
I called the same air conditioning contractor out that had done the original work because they had done the work 4 years ago, and the manager did not realize his crew had left the venting on the ground.
Excellent.
And
so are they going to fix it?
That's what I'm trying to figure out because they were out here last week and I haven't heard back from them yet. I'm trying to be patient.
Well, patience is good, but ultimately they need to correct it. And if that ductwork was inundated with water, they need to change it, not just lift it up if it's filthy. To the point of water, I'll tell you the best people to call and the best thing to do is Alpha Foundations, and they can assess that crawl and do what's they can put drainage in there if you need that to pump it out. And then the ultimate thing that they're able to do is encapsulate the crawl space, and that'll dry it out. It'll be gorgeous. Your home will be fresh. It is not cheap, though it's fabulous. So it's
an older home. It was put up on pedestals. It's not a concrete foundation.
Sure.
So that's very style house, but
I understand. It sounds gorgeous. It's important, though, that it be dry under there, clean and dry. They have a product called Clean Space, Alpha Foundations does, that's fantastic. We have worked together with them probably a couple of hundred times over the years in the greater Jacksonville area, and in every single case, it's come out fantastic. But I would begin with Heating and Air People, then get Alpha Foundations to take a peek at that for you.
Yeah, it's crazy because the heating and air conditioning people say we need the vapor barrier first, and then they want to hang the new stuff.
That's because they don't want to crawl in the mud. They made the mess.
Yeah, I think another thing you need to do about the drain thing is, do you have gutters, sir?
Yeah, I got a local gutter place. It's absolutely fantastic.
Where do you vent the gutters at? I mean, are they vented into a pipe and moved away from the house?
The discharge from the downspouts.
Yeah,
the discharge comes down, goes into a 3-inch, and it goes out towards the driveway and to the side of the house.
Okay,
yeah.
That's okay. Perfect.
And then you can also, if you have because I had a couple cases, where the water was coming into the house and into the sunroom, is we installed a French drain along the side of the house. And what that does is we bury the pipe, and it will right along the – so there's some water moving underneath. There's water moving in there. So you bury the pipe along the side of the house, and what that does is any water that's coming – against the house or moving down from a higher elevation against the house will go into the pipe and then move out away from the house. You have it vented or discharged in another place. But that's very, very successful for drying out underneath the house.
Now, I had one guy try to tell me that I should be using a solar-powered dehumidifier under there.
No.
Oh, my God.
No. There's no sun under there. The idea of dehumidifying is important, and that's what the clean space encapsulation will do.
Yeah.
But a solar powered dehumidifier in a crawl space,
that's some voodoo dust.
You need to get better advice.
Voodoo dust.
Your air conditioning people aren't helping you. Your solar powered dehumidifier guy's not helping you. If you like, we'll come out and look at it and give you something objective. We've got nothing for sale.
What about repairing like the subfloor? I go to all these flooring places. I won't mention any of the vendors, but they have all kinds of people who just want to put the snap and pop flooring down, but nobody wants to do the subfloor repairs.
Yep. There's different contractors.
That's difficult.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to do the easy stuff. They didn't want to tie up your ducking either. Okay.
I got to let you go, Eddie. Right. We're up against the break here. But
gotcha.
It might be just valuable to do a complete diagnostics for you, because you're getting lots of conflicting information, and it doesn't sound that good. It sounds like sales and excuses as opposed to diagnostics and prescriptions. It's 7:53 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Right back at it for the final segment of the Home and Garden Show. You've been with us. Love to have you stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you've been with us. It is 7:58. And a reminder, head on out to the Seawalk Pavilion for the Best Buddies Walk. Please do come up and say hello. I'd love to meet you, and thank you for being with us. We welcome everyone out there, old people, young people, people with disabilities, people without disabilities. It's just it's a glorious, wonderful group of people.
Right.
You had a quick thought on sod repair.
Yeah,
a lot of
people having sod issues. I've gone out to 20 different lawns. You know, they said they can't get the grass to grow, and they've replaced it 3, 4, or 5 times. It's normally take all root rot, and if you're having that type of issue, we'd be glad to come out and take a look at it and give you some advice on how to take care of it.
That's a really cool thing, and you can also visit the website, larrysgarden.com. For the 700 of you who will buy a home this week, go.
700?
Oh, yeah, it's that time of year.
Friends don't let friends buy a home without home inspection.
Go homepro.com. Use your turn signal on the way to the Best Buddies Friendship Walk. Have a beautiful day.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.